Ladies and gentlemen, friends and open-minded people, wherever you live, across the United States of America and across the world, I tell you what, folks, I tell you what this radio program really is human rights radio. It's the most basic program in the world that truly defends human rights and the greatest violator of human rights, the greatest source of death, repression, torture, is communism. It's Bolshevism. And Bolshevism doesn't have the frontline power it has, except maybe in China, which has really transformed to more of a Chinese nationalist government. And maybe North Korea, which is still a hardline communist government that really does painful things, horrible things to its citizens. But we've got to understand that Bolshevism murdered at least 90 million to 100 million people in the 20th century. That's far more than all other massacres of all of human history combined. That's what communism's done. But the interesting thing is the people who control Hollywood and who control media, who control our academia today, who control broadcasting, television, movies, all during the 20th century basically ignored this communist mass murder that was going on in the Soviet Union. And why did they do that? Well, the truth is that the McCarthy hearings were right, and the House Un-American Committees were right. And when 10 of the leading Hollywood writers and producers and others took the Fifth Amendment, we asked if they were communists. Well, actually, they were communists. And of course, today they're making movies talking about how this repression or attempted repression of communists was one of the worst things ever in American history. But the communists are the ones that repress. The communists are the ones that kill. And the Second World War actually emboldened the communists. And the war itself was a great mass murder. 60 million dead European men, women, and children in a war that was not necessary. If that's a good war, then what in hell is a bad war? Well, I have on today a continuation of yesterday's show, the incredible Mike King, who wrote a book called The Bad War, which is a very good play on the idea that the Second World War was the good war. And the Second World War has led into the rest of the 20th century and the early part of this century into a war of wars of blood, cost, horrific conditions for not only the people that we've waged war against from America, but also the countries, people of those countries. And we've got a lot of blowback. 9/11 was blowback, even if you accept the government's position on the 9/11 attack by al-Qaeda. We literally have a government today that is supporting al-Qaeda and ISIS. Yes, we do. Even Clinton admits it in her emails. George Biden admitted that our ally, Saudi Arabia, has been one of the biggest exporters of terrorism, that they've supported al-Nusra, which is al-Qaeda, that they've supported ISIS. And how could that be? Why would that be? Well, it's because of the Jewish domination of our media, which led us to these insane wars like the Iraq War, Afghanistan War, and these current wars in Syria and elsewhere, Yemen, whatever, because they have objectives that the Jewish people think are important to them. And that is the increasing size of Israel. So we're going to go right back in with Mike today, because I wanted to, actually, we had Andrew scheduled for today's program. I contacted him. He's going to come on tomorrow. And everybody loves when Andrew Anglin comes on. He's definitely a very exciting guest. But we're going to do this show today to continue our discussion of the origins of the Second World War with Mike. We got up to the point where we were talking about the fact that the world media was orchestrating and creating this vicious reputation of Germany as a way to promote war. Right after the ascension of Hitler, after the elections, which they became the biggest party in Germany, and he became chancellor, before anything was done, without a single person killed, they were demanding a world war against Germany. And everything that Hitler did to try to, we're getting the feedback, by the way. I think it could be either Mike's, it could be Mike's mic, or it could be Patrick's. Please turn down volume. But it could, you know, it was, they talked about simply the idea of self-determination that the German people who were taken from Germany by the Versailles Treaty, which was unjust. 20 years after the war, many of the Germans were not even united with their home country, their own language, their own people as punishment to Germany. And a violation of those people's rights to self-determination. And every time the Germans took back and united with their own Germans, whether it be in the Saarland or Alsace-Lorraine, or whether it been in Sudetenland, or whether it been with a voluntary Anschluss or a joining with Austria, which was voted on over 90% by the people of Austria, that was talked about as aggression and Hitler's trying to conquer the world. And then when the conflict broke out in Poland, which was about the city of Danzig, which is a city of a million people, over 90% German who voted to go back to their own country, of course, and the fact that Germany was divided, where Germany couldn't even go by land from one part of Germany, the main part of Germany, to east, the what was the eastern part, East Prussia. When this war broke out, the Jewish extremists said, you see what they're doing? And the hatred began the war. So let's start talking about that. The war broke out in 1939. And first of all, welcome back to the program, Mike. I look forward to continue the discussion with you. And I do have a video that we're promoting right now. I got to mention this on Twitter. There's a big Twitter conflict right now about the Jewish role in Bolshevism. And the fact that the Israeli media, mainstream Israeli media, will talk about the fact that Jews led the NKVD, that they were, in fact, the people who ran the gulags that killed and tortured and under which millions and millions of people suffered. But we don't hear about that in America. Jews among themselves can talk about realities, but we can't talk about that in our country because we have a fake news media. But welcome to Mike King, again, the author of The Bad War. Let's go ahead and tell us about the beginnings of the actual fighting between Germany and Poland, and then the bringing in of the other nations into it that made it a world war.
Sure. Well, as we would discuss yesterday, Britain had given a military guarantee to Poland that this is maybe days or a week before the actual fighting broke out. And that was the final, support that Poland, needed to initiate the fight. That gave them the confidence to really become aggressive, and
not come to the peace table too, right? I mean, not negotiate Hitler, a compromise.
Exactly, and that had been going on all along. And I have in my book again, and I love to mine old articles of the New York Slimes for data, because then no one can say, oh, that's not mainstream news. That's conspiracy theory. No, it's your beloved New York Times that said this. And it's surprising how many gems of truth they used to include back then. I guess the public wasn't as stupid as they are today.
Hey, Mike, I got a request from our program engineer from the network for you to speak a little closer to the mic, or perhaps turn up your mic volume. If you have Windows, of course, simply go to your Windows icon, right-click it, to recording, and then you just bump up your volume a little bit. Or in Skype, you could go to Tools, Options, and bump up your mic level so we can hear. We want to hear you very clearly and very powerfully.
Okay, I have the same settings as yesterday. Can you hear me better now?
Well, are you adjusting it upward? A little bit better, but when we get to the break, at least you can do that. Talk close to the microphone for sure, because we do want to hear you. Okay. So, okay, go ahead, please. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we definitely want to hear you well.
Well, as I was saying, that was really what emboldened Poland. But prior to that, well, I was talking about how much I like to rely on the archives of the New York Times, because then they can't deny it. I found an article from early 1939, March. This is maybe 6 or 7 months before the war broke out. And it spoke about how Germany and the Vatican were trying to set up a conference with Britain, France, and Poland, and also Italy, to resolve the issue of Poland peacefully. And there it is, right there in the New York Times. It was the British that said, no way, we're not going to any conference by the Vatican. And instead, this is that same article, they continued to make overtures to the Soviet Union to join in a pact against Germany, a resurrection of the old Triple Entente from World War One. So that's one of the headings in my book. It says, you know, when Hitler turned to the Pope for peace, the British turned to Stalin for war. And this is early 1938. And this is why Poland wouldn't even talk anymore to Germany. And it's interesting, 4 or 5 years earlier, they had another ruler in Poland who was actually getting along with Germany. And Hitler thought very highly of him. And then all of a sudden he died. And then the new dictator, Smigli Rides, took over and became very aggressive. But that's the only reason Poland felt so cocksure of themselves in tormenting Germany, is because the British and the French were propping them up all along. And also FDR, like we spoke about.
Yeah, that's right, FDR. I mean, FDR, as most people should know, was surrounded by Jews like Bernard Baruch and Morgenthau and many other Jews. And he had actually written letters, which was a totally phony, but it was just meant to try to push push war rather than make a negotiated agreement. And the agreement would have simply been very minor. Hitler was even, according to your book, in fact, you point out that Hitler made public statements that he was even willing to let go some of German lands, but to unite for sure the German people of at least Danzig and some of the other areas that were taken by the Versailles Treaty, especially what's called the Polish Corridor today, which was actually a corridor that divided the landmass of Germany from itself. In other words, you couldn't even go from historic Germany and along the land, you could no longer just go by a road. You know, and in fact, they made it very difficult for that transfer, even to even do any sort of vehicle transfer or roads or railroads or anything between the different parts of Germany. And that's all they wanted, was a city which was an ancient German city of Danzig, which was overwhelmingly German, and to make sure that Germany was again connected to itself and not completely divided, where they couldn't even go across land to each other. What are some of the facts on that you could share with our audience?
Well, even up in, well, first of all, we go back to the vicious Versailles Treaty, and let's discuss how that land that formed the corridor that was once part of Germany became part of Poland. It was partitioned, but what happened to the Germans living in that territory? An estimated 5 million of them were essentially told, pack your bags and get the hell out. This isn't Germany anymore. It was a massive ethnic cleansing. It's totally scrubbed from our history books, but it was, you know, something along the lines of what was done to the Palestinians, only in greater numbers. And in many cases, these German families, they just received a note on their door and said, you've got 24 hours to leave. And they had to pack up and trek westwards. The amazing thing is, Hitler wasn't even, towards the end, when he was really desperate to avoid a war, he wasn't even requesting this land back, nor was he requesting that the people be allowed to go back there. He would have settled in the end for just a 1 mile.
That's right. A railway. Yeah, on a road.
And they wouldn't even let him have that. So it was clear that it doesn't matter what concession he made. Even if he said, okay, you can have Danzig, and they still would have found another pretext to initiate the war. So that was all phony. And he did everything he could to avoid the war. And again, I take you to the New York Times, August 28th, 1939, 3 days before the outbreak of the war. This is an actual front page headline of the New York Times that I'm reading from. Berlin thinks door is left open to peaceful solution. And then underneath that, there's the full text of a communique which Hitler wrote to the French president, Daladier, and it's published in its entirety on the front page of the New York Times. Again, they had to do this kind of stuff back then in order to maintain the illusion of objectivity. People weren't as stupid back then, so the Times, believe it or not, published a lot of truth. If you go through those archives, a lot of amazing stories.
Well, you know, maybe that was because back then the Jewish almost total control over the media was nothing compared to it is today. They did control broadcasting, but there were a lot of newspapers, which absolutely, and a lot of magazines and a lot of thought and a lot of people in government who were underlings, not certainly the ones appointed by Roosevelt, who were saying, and there was a huge movement against the war who was going to expose the lies. So they had to have, make the appearance of fairness.
Right. The way they played the game back then, Dr. Duke, is unlike today where it's just 24/7 lies and falsehoods.
Fake news.
Right.
That's Donald Trump said.
They would give you three pieces of fake news and one piece of real news.
Yeah, I got you.
Had to, because the readers weren't as stupid. And that's what I like to do. I like to mine for that real news. And say,
and hey, there was too much other media that would point out the lies, point out their...
A little bit in check, exactly. But there it is on the front page of the Times. Berlin thinks the door is left open at the peaceful solution. I've got other headlines in there. Germany, even after the war started, was trying to stop it. So there's no question, and you could confirm this from the New York Times, the length that Germany was going to avoid the war. And even after it started, and even after Germany was invaded by France a week later.
All right, let's talk about that. Okay, so the war starts, and it was basically a border war. It was over pretty quickly on the part of the Germans. At nearly the same time, just right after that, the Russians invaded with none of the justifications that Germany had in terms of the conflict. They came in from, well, the east, right? And not only did they come in, but they captured the Polish officer corps, 15,000 of the top officers of Poland, which in those days was really your aristocrats, your intelligent, your college educated, kind of the head of the Polish people in a way. And then they took them, of course, to the Katyn Forest and massacred them, murdered them in cold blood, shot them in the back of the head, 15,000 Polish officers. And again, the media in the West covered this up, didn't they?
Oh, they sure did. They covered it up then. And then even fast forward a year and a half later, when Germany went to war with the Soviet Union, and they uncovered the bodies. And they invited the Western media, come in, look what we found. Look what your beloved Soviets did. So even with the tangible evidence presented to them and pictures taken, they still covered it up. So it was absolutely criminal. I mean, it's complicity.
And yeah, they even had some Americans involved also in inspecting. The Germans invited others to come in. And other people of other countries who are certainly not National Socialists. And everybody agreed. I mean, the evidence was overwhelming because the bodies were obviously, any forensic study would show that the bodies took place. And this was in areas that the Germans had not occupied, that the Soviets occupied, that they had to have been done by the Soviets, because the physical evidence of the bodies was absolutely clear that they were killed during the Russian occupation.
That's right. But, you know, the evidence was there, but...
How could we not know that the Soviets would do this kind of stuff? We didn't know that they killed tens of millions of people during the 1930s. Of course, most people didn't know much about it, because the Hollywood media establishment did not have a single, they had dozens and dozens of viciously anti-German movies. They didn't have a single movie about the Russian mass murder of Christians and the gulags.
No, because it was carried out by their ideological and their brethren.
Their brethren.
Yeah. Solzhenitsyn has a great quote about that. He says, the world is silent. The only thing we can conclude is that the press is in the hands of the same perpetrators. And it is. It's just a different branch.
We have that in my video, by the way, and lots of other fantastic. I have the first introductory chapter to my book, The Secret Behind Communism, and we have the quote by Solzhenitsyn and a lot of the powerful, powerful evidence. And then the video I just talked about is called The Israeli Media Reveals the Secret Behind Communism. You can go to Twitter and also get links for it there. We'll put it on my website, and we'll post both videos on the program notes today, as well as links for your book at Amazon. Okay, let's go further. Okay, so the war begins. And so did Hitler start the world war, so to speak? Did he declare war on France or England? Who declared war on whom?
Well, as soon as the war with Poland broke out, Britain and France issued declarations of war to which Germany reciprocated with declarations of peace. and it's very clear. I have all the quotes in my book from Hitler's speeches, even, again, old American newspapers, Hitler saying, "Why must this war in the West be fought? I have always sought friendship with Britain and France." And this is going on for months.
What was his exact he made lots of serious proposals, which were also hidden during this period that was called the phony war, because he made all sorts of proposals specifically, including he just wanted to go back to 1914, even though he was victorious. All he asked for, to go back to the original 1914 borders, which was established Germany before the war. And even more so, he said he'd even give up some land in these peace proposals. He was very generous peace proposals to stop this massive slaughter of humanity.
There was not one inch of territory that he asked for. And this is after the Germans had shed blood in Poland that had not been part of Germany. And he even renounced any claim to that long-disputed area between France and Germany, Alsace-Lorraine. Totally renounced it. He says, okay, France, you can have that. So, and that's a fact. There's not one inch of territory outside of original German lines that he wanted.
And by the way, the British and the French, there was no risk about any of this. I mean, they felt that they could arrange most of the world. They could work on getting the Soviets in the war. They could do all the things. They can get support. In fact, Roosevelt was already trying to send them massive amounts of material and weapons, which is all, by the way, an act of war itself by international law. So they had nothing really to lose by sitting down at the peace table, getting the agreement, and getting the Germans to evacuate this land. There was nothing to lose for the West. We're going to take a break, and also we're going to make sure that during the break, we're going to try to get your microphone better and get your volume a little higher for our audience. We'll be back again in a moment, folks, with our short network commercials. Only one break during our shows today. So here we go. Brian authored a number of books, by the way, and you can see that on his Amazon account. But this we're talking about today is the so-called bad war rather than the so-called good war. Again, folks, just remember this line when you talk to your friends. How in the hell is a war that causes the death of 60 million people a, quote, good war? It's like the idea of you got roaches in your house, so let's burn down your house with you and your children in it, right, to kill the roaches. Even on the allegation the Germans were terrible, doesn't make any sense. And if you listen to this show and all these facts, you'll see that the war was really fought on something. It certainly wasn't 60 million worth 60 million lives to not make peace, especially with the fact that everything the West was angry about, supposedly, which was about the war and conflict with Poland, could have been resolved and fairly and decently by anybody's standards. Amazing. Okay, let's go back to this. We're with Mike again. We've got his mic issues. The mic issues for Mike are resolved. So, Mike, so during this period now, what happened? Now, I've read in your books, and I've read in other books, of course, that France actually did an early invasion of Germany, which didn't work out too well for them.
Well, yeah, this is in the opening days of the war. They advanced about 8 miles into Germany, into the Saarland, and then they stopped. But they did occupy a little piece of Germany. So France invaded Germany, and there's another headline from the New York Times that I reproduce. It's right there. France invades the Reich. Okay, there's no denying this. And this is a full, eight, 9 months. I mean, we've all seen those images of, you know, Hitler at the Eiffel Tower and the Germans marching through Paris. Oh, how horrible. But what they don't tell you is not only did France declare war first, and not only did France draw first blood, but that they also refused to make any kind of peace even after they attacked Germany. So they've invaded Germany, and the response from Hitler was, let's sit down and talk peace. This is, they've already.
So Hitler did not go, and then in turn.
Respond. That area of Germany remained occupied for about a month, a full month.
So he didn't even try to to reverse the occupation of German land by armed force, armed takeover by the French, because he wanted peace. Now, this is a very different image of Hitler than we're presented. Here's this guy. He's attacked, partly invaded by another country. He wants to simply go back to his 1914 borders, and he doesn't even respond with repulsing, which he could have easily done, with, as time has proven, to fight and kill the French because he wanted to make peace and not have the world fall into a world war. That's very, very different than the image we get in the media, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, think about it. What he would have been totally justified at that time to engage the French in combat, but he didn't. But finally, after about a month, he had to, and they pushed the French back out of that German territory. But they lost about 400 German men in doing so. So, and here's the headline: September 7, 1939. I've got it up on my website, but you can see it in the book. I'm going to read it to you. New York Times front page, big bold: French invade Reich. And then the next clause is British land in France. So, I mean, there you have confirmation right from the New York Slimes as to who the aggressor actually was. And then in that same newspaper, there's an article in there quoting Goering. It says here, Goering makes peace bid to Paris. This is actually 2 days later. So what a what do you call that, a juxtaposition here?
I mean, just France, a total hypocrisy. It's just like it's exactly the opposite of the way it was presented to the world.
This is like Canada invades Maine, and Washington proposes peace talks.
Yeah, well, let me tell you, that America would never do that. Imagine if Cuba, for instance, invaded South Florida. Do you think we wouldn't have fought them? Do you think we would? You try to negotiate, there'd be absolute war. We bomb countries in the Middle East because of some allegation that we don't like them for some reason. I mean, so Hitler was a lot more of a peacemaker than anything America's ever done since. But of course, we've been under the same Jewish power that wanted this world war, the Second World War, so long ago, right?
It would not be an exaggeration to say that Hitler, although a great warrior, was at heart a pacifist. That's the truth. He was a man of culture. He had plans for Germany. He wanted to build Germany into a cultural, artistic, economic wonder of the world. To him, this whole idea of war was just something that, no, this is not what I want. It's the last thing that he wanted. It held him back from accomplishing the wonderful things for his people that he had in mind.
Because they did make a renaissance in their country in terms of their economy. It had the strongest economy of the world per capita, and they were probably the lowest level on the economy and unemployment than any nation of the world. It was horrible conditions in Germany, and the people had a new beginning. I mean, he got rid of the degeneration, the porn, the destructiveness, the drug use. The people were united and happy. He had the first environmental protections of any country to make the air and water and the forests remain. He was one of the first guys that promoted the first government that recognized the danger of smoking in terms of cancer. Many other things. It's just amazing to think of the presentation of the country compared to how the media presented it. And yet, then you have the Soviets who killed tens of millions of people at the same time. And even before the war, in peacetime, millions and millions of Christians and Russians, and nothing. No evil. No, there's very few articles in the quote New York Times about the mass murder of tens of millions of people.
And they didn't stop with the invasion of Poland. I'm talking about Stalin. In this same period, late 1939, they invaded Finland. They bombed Helsinki. Something like 300 civilians were killed. They invaded eastern Romania. They took back the Baltic states.
The Baltic countries. Latvia, and they killed
Romania, Estonia. Six countries Stalin attacked in the same period, and the world was silent.
They probably killed at least a million people in all those countries combined. Easy, you know.
Yeah.
And in fact, when the Germans came in there, when the war came about with Russia, when the Germans were forced to do this, when that occurred, they went into Estonia and Latvia and all these countries, and they saw, and they offered again to bring people in from around the world to see these massive crimes, murderous crimes, naked bodies thrown up who were clearly tortured, not just murdered, but tortured to death, the most grisly things, bodies with their tongues sticking out. It's disgusting to even talk about. Wow. And this took place on a massive, massive, massive level. And they also went very much against the Christian church because they felt like the Catholic Church and the Orthodox Church in these Eastern countries were, could be a source of revolt against the atheistic communists.
Yeah.
So they murdered, I'm just saying, hundreds of thousands of nuns, women, priests, acolytes, destroyed tens of thousands of Christian churches. And not just in Russia, but in the lands that they conquered. Unbelievable. Just unbelievable. Yeah. The fact, it just shows you how much control America was under. Okay, let's go further. So for months and months and months, Germany kept sending peace proposals to the West. And as we go further in the war, many of these peace proposals went to the British government and to other governments in the West. They were totally blacked out from the media of the Western world. They literally suppressed a lot of these peace proposals. The British, for instance, did not allow the British people to hear the incredibly generous peace proposals of Hitler, even though he was headed. And even after he conquered France and he was at the top, he said, let's stop this war before it kills any more people. Tell us about that.
Well, you had that period of time, which is referred to as the phony war between the declaration of war upon Germany and then the actual fighting, which didn't break out until May of 1940. But, you know, there was nothing phony about it because it was really just a time of preparation by the British and the French. During that time, they deployed, the British had like 500,000 men they sent over into France. And then, of course, the French Continental Army in its own right was probably, next to the Soviets, the largest army in Europe. So they had quietly amassed and mobilized millions of troops and tanks and planes and jeeps and trucks and logistical support in northern France, right up against the border with Belgium and Holland. And the plan was, they were going to secure from Belgium and Holland, who were pretending to be neutral, but they weren't. They would, when the time came, they were to allow this massive Allied force to come through Britain and France into the German Rhineland, which is where all their industry is.
Now, it would have been advantageous for the Germans to strike first, but if they knew that the British and the French were going to continue the war, it would have been advantageous for them to strike first before all this. These troops and the aid came in from Great Britain and the support that was given by the United States to Great Britain to mount up. But they didn't do it. They were still trying to come to a peaceful resolution of the war and a very generous one, something the 1914 borders of Germany, I understand, even when they were on top, correct?
Yeah. They held out hope, and it was not a hope that was totally in vain because there were many in the British establishment who were willing to listen and sit down and avoid the war, including members of Churchill's own war cabinet. And it was a big conflict at one point. It was called the War Cabinet Crisis. A prominent Lord Halifax went head to head with Churchill because, Italy had not joined the war at that time, and they were proposing peace. He wanted to have a sit-down, Mussolini did. And Halifax's argument was, well, let's at least listen to what he says. He promises that Germany will propose nothing that is disadvantageous to Britain. And he made that case that, at the very least, let's listen to what the Italian ambassador has to say. And Churchill outmaneuvered Halifax, and he killed the proposal.
Let's talk about also, so war... Finally, the British are still coming in. The forces are doing that. They're trying to start this conflict. So eventually, Hitler said, "Okay, if we're going to fight a war, we can't sit here and fight it in Germany. If you're going to try to go to these other countries and invade us, we have to try to protect our own natural defensible line." So Germany then did reply to the French already attacks in the war and going in. And they got to Dunkirk, and you had a great deal of the Free French forces and the British forces at Dunkirk. What happened there? The Germans, apparently, even when they were conquering France in the end, were still trying to offer kind of a peace leaf to the British and say, look, we're going to fight, you know, to the coast, but we're not going to have the Luftwaffe come and bomb you into oblivion and sink all these ships and kill so many hundreds of thousands of British and French on the channel. And essentially, Hitler gave the order to not allow the Luftwaffe to bomb the troops, hoping that by this generosity that the British would come to their senses and not continue the war. Is that correct?
Well, that's absolutely correct. The second part of that, and this is really dastardly, is, excuse me, I mean, it kind of backfired. I mean, Hitler was figuring, well, this will look like a very magnanimous act. The British will know that I am sincere and that I do not wish to fight. But what did Churchill and the British Jewish press do? They spun Dunkirk into an heroic escape, a victory that we escaped right under Hitler's nose. Before they could kill us.
The stopping of the Luftwaffe, which had air superiority completely over the skies.
Oh, those men were finished. Europe. Those men were finished on the beach. They could have killed or captured every last one of them, which is something Hitler didn't want to do. And his generals wanted to go in, some of his generals. But I think Hitler calculated, I mean, in retrospect, it's a miscalculation, but I think he was calculating that, first of all, At his heart, he didn't want to kill these men or capture them. But beyond that, he felt that this would be a good gesture of friendship. But immediately, the lying, dirty, low-down press, the Jewish press of Great Britain, they twisted it. They made it seem like a heroic escape. They got away before they could be killed or captured.
And now let's go to one of the most dastardly parts of it, and one reason why the war continued and the peace proposals weren't offered. We got to go into this. David Irving has been very, very powerfully researching that whole period. And as you said, the War Cabinet actually came within a vote, a single vote, of accepting the very generous peace proposals of Germany. And by the way, at this time, the death toll was tiny compared ultimately to the rest of the war. So many, not only would have millions of troops' lives been saved, fighting men, but also tens of millions of civilians, because there wasn't, at that point, great murder or massacre or destruction of civilians of any kind during the war. So here's the story, and this is what Irving dug up, and you can see the documents are really clear. So the cabinet of Churchill actually came within a vote of accepting Hitler's peace proposals. Now, Churchill decided to manipulate British public opinion and manipulate this cabinet by doing one of the most horrific things that's ever been done in warfare. See, warfare, basically, by the Geneva Convention, was that civilians were off limits. But Churchill organized a mass bombing and they were targeting German civilians with phosphorus and incendiary huge bombs. And they bombed Hamburg, and they bombed Cologne, and they bombed Berlin. And so they started bombing civilians, and they killed thousands upon thousands of men, women, and children burned alive in their homes. And what they were actually trying to do is not only hurt Germany and terrorize Germany and make them bend, but they were actually, Churchill was actually trying to get Germany to respond in kind. And they were successful manipulating that way. In fact, Hitler made some famous speeches in the Reichstag, didn't he? And this was the famous total war speeches. And he said, look, you've bombed our civilian populations with massive firebombs and massive death of our men, women, and children, burned them alive. And if you continue this, we will respond. That's the total war. And then we're going to bomb you, and we'll have 10 times more bombs falling on you. And for 7 days, this British bombing went on, again, directed by our Jewish masters, actually. Yeah. And because we should never gone into that, there was no reason to fight a war like that. There's no reason to bring massive civilian casualties. And we went and we did it 7 days in a row. And finally, Hitler gave the speech and said, if you bomb us one more time, we will respond. And Irving says in his studies of Churchill that Churchill actually was cursing because they organized this big, massive bombing raid. They organized this big, massive bombing raid. I'm getting a little feedback from somebody. And on Germany. And they couldn't bomb because the weather was so socked in over Europe, over the German cities, so they couldn't bomb. And they had to have sight at that point in the war. And Churchill's cursing. My God, I've got Hitler where I want him now. Hopefully the weather will break. And the weather finally broke, and they massively bombed, killed about 15,000, 20,000 German civilians, men, women, and kids, burned centuries-old, beautiful European cities, churches, everything. A war against the civilian Germans, against the Christian civilian population. And then, finally, Hitler responded, and Churchill said, we will fight and all that, and he bombed the east end of London. And Churchill then went into the rubble and screamed his fist at the sky and said, yeah, you evil, murdering bastard, this is it. And, of course, once Germany responded with a small amount of bombing compared to what the British had been doing, then the media used that to end any peace proposals. Is that correct? And what's some more details that you'd like to offer?
Oh, that about sums it all up. It was repeated bombings of German cities, and again, Hitler did not respond. 1, 2, 3, 4, I think it was 7 or 8 times before he responded. And he still did not respond in kind. And if you look at the overall numbers of World War II, I mean, here's one statistic. More people were killed in one night in Operation Gomorrah. That's what they named it. That's how sadistic these bastards were. It was a big joke to them. They
even
named
used
it
Jewish
terminology for the biblical city that was burned to the ground. Operation Gomorrah, the bombing, firebombing of Hamburg in 1943, killed 40,000 people. The total number of British killed throughout the entirety of the war is between 25 and 30,000 people. So the British killed more in one night in Hamburg, and let's not even talk about Dresden, but just one night in Hamburg, then were killed during the entirety of the war.
For one city, one night.
British. One city, one night. You don't think the German Luftwaffe never even built heavy bombers. The concept of firebombing British cities, they never responded in that level. More people were killed in the week of D-Day. French people, who we were there to quote-unquote liberate. The Allies just bombed anywhere there was a German president. They just bombed the whole city. 70,000 French civilians killed during the week of D-Day.
Which was more than the French killed by the Germans all previously.
Oh, yeah. And that's doubled in the total amount of British who were killed.
Burning down the house to kill the mice.
Right? Tell me, who the monster here? Who's the aggressor? In Italy, this is after Italy switched sides. The British and American bombing of Italy killed 60,000 Italian civilians. Three-quarters of them was after Italy had switched sides.
Now, at the end of the war, let's go into – we've only got about 5 minutes. This has been another amazing show. So much truth. I urge people who are listening to this program to copy this. You should go ahead and take these two shows, take out the commercials, use your video editor, and go ahead and make this into one video called The Bad War, a discussion with Mike King and David Duke about the origins of the Second World War, something like that. And get that up on YouTube. This will be an incredible video, and I urge people to do that and get this thing out, because this is a go-to thing. Okay, so now that's just the beginning of the atrocities that went on in this war that are not talked about by any of our media. There's no movies. There's no memorials. There's nothing. So then later on, we went on the side of the war of the Soviets. We already killed 30, 40 million Christians, and we're bringing Soviet communism repression and murder and mass rape, which is all admitted, to all the innocent people of Eastern Europe who are not Germans, right, but who suffered total terror, being shipped off to the gulags, mass murder, starvation, everything else during the war. Tell us about that a little bit, as well as between 10 and 15 million Germans who were ethnically cleansed from their ancestral home of hundreds of years and taken out of their own country and in the middle of winter, and millions of them died, and millions of them, and practically every woman in the East, they say from the age of 8 to almost 80, were raped and sexually assaulted and mutilated, just decent Christian women. This is the side of the opposition, my friends. This is the side of the ones who are supposedly the Allied side, who are fighting the good war, because we were allied with the Soviets, and we ourselves committed a lot of atrocities with this bombing. I don't blame our pilots. They were brave men. I blame the politicians and the people who did this stuff. But tell us about some of the war crimes against the German people in the war. The crimes, by the way, the Germans didn't commit against these other peoples.
No, actually, the conduct of the German soldier everywhere he went was exemplary. And I've even gotten emails from people who remember the occupation in places like Belgium and Holland. They all confirm that. But yeah, I mean, it was just horrific what the Red Army and in particular the NKVD unleashed on the peoples of Eastern Europe, the torture, the rape, the murder. But I want to go back to something I found in a Time magazine issue of 19.
Make it quick. We only got about a minute or so, so okay, we got to hurry.
Well, Time magazine revealed that as far back as 1942, Stalin had asked that he could have the Eastern Europe. So, and the whole war was fought to that end. Eisenhower delayed time and time and time again in order to allow the Soviets to take all of the East. So we were the accomplices. It wasn't
Look,
a blunder.
Thank you so much, Mike, for being with us. Magnificent program. This is something we're going to save and something which would be a great wake-up call, red pill on the so-called good war. I want to... Thank you so much. And again, go to Amazon and just type in Google the good, the bad war, and also go to his site, tomatobubble.com. Folks, I want to say one last very quick comment. We got to go to the hard break on the network. But also, the head of the Russian Red Army, the communist propaganda, was Ilya Ehrenberg, who literally said to rape the German women, kill them, rip the babies out of their wombs. And one of the greatest war criminals in the history of the world, he should have been prosecuted. He later gave all of his papers to Yad Vashem, the Holocaust Memorial in Israel, folks. So this is the reality. You have Yad Vashem talking about supposed crimes against Jews, and at the same time, they honor people who promoted the biggest mass murder in the history of the world, the Soviets, and of course, against the German people and the Eastern European people. That's the truth about the so-called good war, which was the most horrific, murderous war in all history, which lies right at the doorsteps of the Jewish power that promoted it all over the Western world. Love you. Be back again tomorrow. Until then, just keep thinking free. Tomorrow, Andrew England. Thank you so much.